I am Diane Lucas.
And this is Mick, the Doctor of Digital.
And welcome to Music 101. Music 101 is created to empower music itself and let the dark icon in the music industry. Another week, another great episode. Memphis Groove, the city that changed music forever.
And this is the city that's America's musical melting pot. You know, when people talk about American music, they're really talking about Memphis, and it's got to come to mind. This is not hyperbole. This is historical fact. Memphis stands as the single most important musical crossroads in American history, a place where the entrepreneurial spirit of American capitalism created unprecedented opportunities for artists from every background to collaborate, innovate, and reach audiences they never could have imagined. Here in the River City, blues flowed from the Mississippi Delta, country music drifted down from Nashville, and gospel echoed from church halls, all converging in recording studios where visionary entrepreneurs like Sam Phillips and Jim Stewart broke through politics with a simple act of recognizing talent wherever they found it. The result? Rock and roll was born, soul music found its voice, and the blues evolved into something that could speak to the entire world. Memphis isn't just a city with musical history. It's the place where American music became American, where the free market created space for authentic artistic expression to flourish, and where visitors today can still walk the same streets, stand in the same studios, and feel the creative energy that changed everything.
That changed everything. And thank you so much, Memphis Groove, for carrying your legacy to the world. So, Mr. Mick, so when we talk about Memphis music, we have to start the Sun Studio. This is where it all began, right?
Calling Sun Studio the birthplace of rock and roll isn't marketing, it's documented history. When Sam Phillips opened Memphis Recording Service at 706 Union Avenue in 1950, he wasn't trying to create a genre. He was trying to create opportunities. Phillips had the revolutionary business philosophy record that anyone could record with talent, regardless of their background, and find ways to get that music to audiences who would appreciate it. What made Phillips special wasn't just his ear for talent. It was his understanding of how the recording industry could democratize music. Before Sun Studio, most recording was controlled by major labels in New York or Los Angeles, and they had very specific ideas about what was commercially viable. Phillips saw something different. He saw that Memphis was this incredible convergence point where rural blues, gospel, country, and pop music were already mixing naturally in the community. The technical setup at Sun Studio was deceptively simple. A single room with basic equipment, but Phillips had created this distinctive slapback echo effect that became the Sun sound. Consider Elvis's first recording, That's All Right, from July 5th, 1954. You can hear that distinctive Sun Studio sound, that echo, that intimacy, that some of that spontaneous discovery. Phillips understood that great recording wasn't about perfection. It was about capturing authentic emotion and energy. His studio became a place where musicians felt safe to experiment, to try things they'd never attempted before. In conclusion, Sun Studios succeeded because Phillips created both the technical environment and the business model that allowed authentic American music to flourish.
To flourish indeed. In the Million Dollar Quartet season. That's legendary, isn't it, Mr. May?
December 4th, 1956 is one of the most important days in American music history, and it happened completely by accident, which tells you everything about the creative atmosphere Phillips had cultivated at Sun Studio. So here's what happened. Jerry Lee Lewis was there as a session musician backing Carl Perkins, who was recording some follow-ups to Blue Suede Shoes. Johnny Cash stopped by to say hello. And Elvis, who had already left Sun for RCA, but was still friendly with everyone, dropped in just to visit. Marianne Keisker, Phillips' assistant, was smart enough to realize what was happening and started recording. What you got was this completely unrehearsed jam session featuring four guys who would have individually changed American music, all sitting around one piano, trading songs, sharing stories, and just enjoying each other's company. This recording captures something magical. They weren't superstars performing. These were young musicians learning from each other, pushing each other to be better, sharing their influences. The music business's significance is enormous. Here you had artists who would normally be competitors in the marketplace sitting together, collaborating, inspiring each other. That's the Memphis spirit. Competition elevated everyone rather than dividing them. What's really remarkable is how different their individual styles were, yet how naturally they blended. Lewis brought that wild piano technique. Perkins had that country rock guitar approach. Cash contributed that deep storytelling voice, and Elvis provided that charismatic energy that tied it all together. In conclusion, the Million Dollar Quartet session proves that the best American music emerges from collaboration across different platforms and traditions. And Memphis provided the perfect environment for that kind of creative cross-pollination.
Mr. Mick, Sun Studio also recorded some incredible blues artists, didn't it?
Absolutely crucial to the story. Before Elvis, before the rockabilly explosion, Sam Phillips was holding and building his reputation by recording some of the greatest blues artists in American history. And this wasn't just about the music. It was about creating economic opportunities for talented musicians in the Democratic Party's segregated South. Howling Wolf, in my humble opinion, the prominent blues artist of all time, was someone whom we featured actually on Music 101. He's important to highlight. His real name was Chester Arthur Burnett, and he recorded some of the most important early sides at Sun Studio. Phillips recognized immediately that Wolf had something special. That powerful primal voice and commanding stage presence. Moanin' at Midnight demonstrates perfectly what Phillips was looking for in blues recordings. This isn't polished studio music. This is raw emotional expression captured with perfect clarity and that distinctive Sun Studio echo. B.B. King cut some early tracks there too before he became the internationally recognized king of the blues. Phillips understood that the blues were the foundation of everything that was built on. You couldn't understand rockabilly or early rock and roll without understanding the blues tradition that informed it. What's really important to recognize is how Phillips's business model created opportunities that didn't exist elsewhere. Major labels weren't interested in recording blues artists for mainstream audiences, and they certainly weren't interested in promoting them fairly. Phillips not only recorded these artists, he worked to get their music played on radio stations and distributed to record stores. Ike Turner recorded Rocket 88 at Sun Studio in 1951, and many music historians consider it the first rock and roll record. The distorted guitar sound, which happened to accidentally when Turner's amplifier was damaged during transport, became a defining element of rock and roll. Incredibly, all three of these recordings were made in 1951 alone. In conclusion, Sun Studio's blues recordings prove that American capitalism, when guided by wisdom and integrity, could create platforms for authentic artistic expression that crossed political boundaries and laid the foundation for the most influential music in American history.
So when visitors come to Memphis today, Sun Studio is still a must-see destination, Mr. Mack?
It's essential, and the staff is incredibly engaging and enthusiastic to be there. Many of the employees are also musicians who record there and are trying to capture this magic. Sun Studio is still operating as both a working recording studio and a museum, which makes it unique among music destinations. You can stand in the exact spot where Elvis recorded That's All Right, where the Million Dollar Quartet had their legendary jam session, where Howlin' Wolf laid down those primal blues sides. The tours are incredible because they're led by people who genuinely understand the historical significance of what happened there. You'll see the original microphones, the same acoustic tiles that created that distinctive slapback echo, even the same piano that Jerry Lee Lewis played during the Million Dollar Quartet session. You can see where the killer, Jerry Lee, burnt the keys of the studio piano where he put out his guitar and his cigar. And if you're like me, the tour guide will come right up to you and point out the three holes of crosses in the floor. That's where the stand-up bass for the musician stood. The gift shop is actually worth mentioning because it's not just tourist stuff. They sell high-quality reissues of the original Sun recordings, many of them unavailable anywhere else. It's like having access to the actual historical artifacts of American music. And if you enjoy modern music, pick up a copy of Ian Hunter, who recorded more recently for Sun and even wrote a song called Ghosts about the town, specifically about Sun Studio. And location-wise, it's right in downtown Memphis, where you can easily walk from Sun Studio to Beale Street, to the Civil Rights Museum, and to all the essential Memphis destinations. In conclusion, Sun Studio offers visitors the chance to experience American musical history not as something distant and untouchable, but as something alive and continuing to influence new generations of artists.
Moving from Sun Studio to Stax Records, Mr. Meg, that's a completely different chapter in Memphis music, isn't it?
Different, but connected, because Memphis was this ecosystem where each musical development built on what came before. Stax Records, founded in 1957 by Jim Stewart and Estelle Aaron Axton, took the entrepreneurial spirit and recording innovation of Sun Studio and applied it to soul music, creating what became known worldwide as the Stax sound. What made Stax revolutionary was both musical and social. This was a capitalist record label in the Democratic Party's segregated South. Black and white musicians recording together, writing together, sharing profits. The house band, Booker T and the MGs, was integrated. Booker T. Jones on keyboards, Steve Cropper on guitar, Duck Dunn on bass, and Al Jackson Jr. on drums. One fabulous introduction to Stax is their song, Green Onions. Green Onions became Stax's breakthrough hit, and you can hear everything that would define the Stax sound. That tight rhythm session, the organ-driven groove, the guitar work that was melodic but never flashy. The business model was genius. Stewart and Axton created an environment where musicians felt ownership in their success. Artists weren't just hired hands, they were collaborators who shared in the creative and financial rewards. In conclusion, Stax proved that soul music could be both artistically authentic and commercially successful when artists had the creative freedom and economic incentives to develop their own distinctive sound.
Authentic indeed, so Mr. Mick. And Arthur's writing was the king of Stax, wasn't he?
Otis Redding was absolutely the heart and soul of Stax Records, and his story perfectly illustrates how the Memphis music scene nurtured and developed talent. Redding came from Macon, Georgia in 1962, essentially as a driver for Johnny Jenkins and the Pine Toppers, and sounding quite a bit like Little Richard himself. But when Jenkins finished his Stax session early, Redding asked if he could record something. The result was These Arms of Mine, and everything changed. You can hear Redding's raw talent, but you can also hear how the Stax musicians, particularly Steve Cropper's guitar work, created the perfect setting for his voice to shine. What made Redding special wasn't just that incredible voice. It was his ability to convey authentic emotion in everything he sang. Whether it was the tenderness of These Arms of Mine or the desperation of Try a Little Tenderness, Redding sang like his life depended on it. Redding's success at Stax demonstrates the power of the label's collaborative approach. He worked closely with Steve Cropper on songwriting, with the MCs on arrangements, and the Memphis horns on those distinctive brass parts. This wasn't one artist backed by session musicians. This was a creative partnership. His performance at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967 introduced him to hippie rock audiences who had never heard soul music presented with such power and authenticity. Tragically, Redding died in a plane crash just 3 days after recording Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, which became his biggest hit posthumously. In conclusion, Otis Redding's career at Stax shows how Memphis created an environment where authentic artistic expression could flourish and reach audiences across all racial and cultural boundaries.
Cultural boundaries indeed. Isaac Hayes brought a completely different dimension to stuff, didn't he, Mr. Mack?
Isaac Hayes represents the evolution of Stax from a scrappy independent label to a sophisticated musical powerhouse. Hayes started as a session musician and songwriter, co-writing Sam and Dave hits like Soul Man and Hold On, I'm Coming with David Porter. But when Hayes stepped out as a solo artist, he revolutionized what soul music could be. His 1969 album, Hot Buttered Soul, took popular songs and transformed them into extended, orchestrated masterpieces. His version of Walk On By turned a 3-minute Dionne Warwick hit into a 12-minute journey that redefined how soul music could approach melody, arrangement, and emotional expression. Hayes understood that soul music didn't have to be confined to the 3-minute single format. He could create albums that worked as complete artistic statements while still delivering the emotional impact that made soul music so powerful. The theme from Shaft, on heavy rotation on my 8-track tape in my 1970 Vore van, earned Hayes an Academy Award for Best Original Song, earning him an Oscar and the first to win for a non-acting category. That wah-wah guitar, those orchestral arrangements, Hayes' spoken word introductions, this was soul music evolved into something cinematic and sophisticated without losing its raw emotional power. Hayes' success opened doors for other Stax artists to experiment with longer forms, more complex arrangements, and broader artistic ambitions. In conclusion, Isaac Hayes proved that Memphis soul music could be both commercially successful and artistically adventurous, inspiring countless musicians to push beyond traditional genre boundaries.
Mr. Mick, what happened to Stax Records? Why did it eventually close?
The Stax story is both triumph and tragedy, and it perfectly illustrates both the opportunities and challenges facing independent labels in the American music industry. Through the 1960s, Stax was incredibly successful. They had major hits, international recognition, and a roster of artists who were genuinely changing American music. But business challenges started mounting. In 1968, Atlantic Records sold Stax to Gulf Western, a massive conglomerate that didn't understand the creative culture that made Stax special. Many of the original artists, including Otis Redding's posthumous releases, were tied up in complex distribution deals. Al Bell, who became Stax's president, tried to maintain the label's independence and artistic integrity, but the financial pressures were enormous. The music industry was changing. Major labels were consolidating power, distribution was becoming more complex, and independent labels were struggling to compete. Stax's final years produced some incredible music. The Wax-Stax concert in 1972 was similar to Woodstock, featuring Isaac Hayes, the Staples Singers, and other Stax artists performing for over 100,000 people in Los Angeles. But financial problems persisted. By 1975, Stax was forced into bankruptcy, ending one of the most important chapters in American music history. In conclusion, Stax's rise and fall demonstrate both the incredible creative possibilities that American entrepreneurship could create and the challenges independent artists and labels face competing against major corporate entertainment conglomerates.
But Mr. Mick, we can still the visitors still experience tax history in Memphis today, right?
Absolutely. And it's one of the most impressive music museums in America. The Stax Museum of American Soul Music, built on the original site of Stax Records, does an incredible job of preserving and presenting this crucial piece of American cultural history. It's really authentic, and my daughter verified it for me when we visited. They have a three-sided virtual musical display with dancers, and my daughter remarked, "Dad, you dance just like them." That's what happens when you're a part of a history. It happens to the best of us. The museum recreates the original Studio A, where all those classic Stax recordings were made. You can see Isaac Hayes' gold Cadillac, costumes worn by Stax artists, and most importantly, listen to high-quality recordings that demonstrate why the Stax sound was so influential. What makes the museum special is how it contextualizes Stax within the broader civil rights movement and American social history. You can learn how recording sessions in Memphis helped break down the Democratic Party's barriers through music, and how economic opportunities in the music industry created pathways for capital and entrepreneurship. In conclusion, the Stax Museum offers visitors a chance to understand how American soul music emerged from a specific place and time while continuing to influence musicians and audiences around the world.
Around the world, for sure. Now we have to talk about Beale Street. This is where Memphis blues really live, isn't it?
Beale Street is the soul of Memphis blues, but it's also the story of American entrepreneurship, creating opportunities for authentic cultural expression. For over a century, Beale Street has been where blues musicians could find audiences, develop their craft, and build careers that would influence American music forever. Ironically enough, I picked up my favorite British bluesman's video performance by Long John Baldry on Beale Street. But Great Britain is a testament to the world appeal of the blues when it gained popularity there. The Rolling Stones and others, as they returned the favor, and American blues came back to this country. The street's history goes back to the 1890s, when businesses, musicians, and entrepreneurs created the vibrant cultural district in the heart of Memphis. This wasn't just entertainment, this was economic empowerment. Musicians could perform for paying audiences, club owners could build successful businesses, and the entire community benefited from this thriving cultural economy. W.C. Handy, often called the father of the blues, established his music publishing business on Beale Street and wrote songs like St. Louis Blues and Beale Street Blues that introduced blues music to mainstream America. The songs are truly American. When we were at the Memphis Music Hall of Fame, the two young lady guys were thrilled that my daughter and I were from the Philadelphia area, and they pointed out the close musical connection between Memphis and Philadelphia. Handy's genius was understanding that blues could maintain its authentic emotional power while reaching broader audiences through professional songwriting, arrangement, and marketing. In conclusion, Beale Street demonstrates how American free market capitalism, when operating in environments that valued authentic cultural expression, could create sustainable economic opportunities for artists while preserving and developing America's most musical tradition.
Mr. Mick, what's the atmosphere like on Beale Street today for visitors?
Modern Beale Street is this incredible combination of historical preservation and living musical culture. When you walk down Beale Street today, you're experiencing over a century of continuous blues tradition, but you're also seeing how that tradition adapts and evolves for contemporary audiences. The clubs along Beale Street, B.B. King's Blues Club, Rum Boogie Cafe, Blue City Cafe, feature live music 7 nights a week. These aren't tribute acts or tourist shows. They are working musicians keeping the blues tradition alive while developing their own distinctive styles. What's remarkable is the diversity of the music. You'll hear traditional Delta blues, modern Chicago blues, blues rock fusion, and artists who are pushing blues into new territory while respecting its historical foundation. The street itself is beautifully preserved, with historical markers explaining the significance of different locations. You can see where W.C. Handy lived and worked, where famous clubs operated during the street's heyday, and where musicians like Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf performed when they came through Memphis. It's not just about the past. Beale Street is still discovering and developing new talent. Musicians come from around the world to perform there, knowing that Beale Street street audiences understand and appreciate authentic blues performance. The Memphis Music Hall of Fame is right there on Beale Street, honoring not just blues musicians, but all the Memphis artists who contributed to American music, from Elvis and Johnny Cash to Otis Redding and Isaac Hayes to contemporary artists carrying on Memphis musical traditions. In conclusion, Beale Street offers visitors the chance to experience blues music not as a historical artifact, but as a living, breathing cultural expression that continues to evolve while maintaining its authentic emotional power.
Authentic again. Speaking of contemporary Memphis artists, the city's musical legacy continues today, doesn't it, Mr. Mack?
Memphis never stopped being a center for musical innovation. The city's influence on hip-hop, for example, is enormous. What's fascinating is how Memphis hip-hop artists draw on the same musical traditions that influence blues, soul, and rock artists. That emphasis on authentic cultural expression, that understanding of how rhythm and melody can tell stories, that entrepreneurial spirit that created opportunities in the Memphis music scene. Al Green, since he recorded in Memphis at High Records, represents the continuation of Memphis soul traditions from the 1970s and beyond. Let's Stay Together demonstrates how Memphis musicians continued developing and refining soul music even after Stax Records closed. The city's musical infrastructure, recording studios, venues, music education programs continue is supporting new generations of musicians who understand that Memphis represents something special in American music culture. In conclusion, Memphis's contemporary music scene proves that the creative environment and entrepreneurial spirit that produce Elvis, Otis Redding, and B.B. King continue nurturing new artists who understand how to balance respect for tradition with innovative artistic expression.
When we talk about the Memphis sound, we're really talking about this incredible mixing of different musical traditions. Aren't we, Mr. Mike?
The Memphis sound isn't just one style. It's this incredible cross-pollination of blues, country, gospel, and pop music that happened because Memphis created the perfect environment for musical collaboration across cultural boundaries. American capitalism, operating in Memphis's unique social and economic environment, created opportunities for musicians from different backgrounds to work together, learn from each other, and create something completely new. Think about Elvis's early Sun recordings. That's All Right takes Arthur Crudup's blues song, but approaches it with country music sensibilities, gospel vocal techniques, and this completely fresh energy that nobody had heard before. That recording session included Scotty Moore on guitar and Bill Black on bass, both country musicians who were learning to play blues and rhythm and blues. The result wasn't pure blues, pure country, or pure anything. It was this new hybrid that drove from multiple traditions while creating something entirely original. The same thing happened at Stax. Booker T and the MGs combined gospel organ, country guitar techniques, blues rhythms, and pop song structures to create the foundation for Southern soul music. Memphis created an environment where these musical cross-pollinations could happen naturally. Musicians lived in the same neighborhoods, played in the same clubs, and recorded in the same studios. Economic opportunities in the music industry encouraged collaboration rather than segregation. In conclusion, the Memphis sound demonstrates how American free market principles, when applied in environments that valued authentic artistic expression over artificial barriers, could produce musical innovations that influence the entire world.
Mr. Mick, how did radio play a role in spreading Memphis music beyond the city?
Radio was absolutely crucial. And Memphis was perfectly positioned to take advantage of radio's power to democratize music. WDIA, which began broadcasting in 1947, was the first radio station in the United States to program entirely for Southern American audiences. But more importantly for our story, it was where B.B. King got his start as a DJ, calling himself the Beale Street Blues Boy. King's radio show introduced Memphis blues to audiences throughout the Mid-South, but it also provided a platform where different musical styles could reach all audiences. Listeners tuned in to hear authentic blues, country, and pop music, and musicians learned about each other's traditions. Sam Phillips understood radio's importance immediately. He worked actively to get Sun recordings played on stations throughout the South and beyond. When That's All Right started getting radio play, it created demand that forced record stores to stock it, distributors to carry it, and other radio stations to play it. Stax Records maintained similar relationships with radio programmers, understanding that airplay was essential for reaching audiences beyond Memphis's local market. What's really important is how Memphis radio helped break down the artificial boundaries that record labels and music industry executives had created between different musical styles. Radio audiences heard great music as great music, regardless of whether it was characterized as blues, country, pop, or soul. In conclusion, Memphis radio stations proved that American audiences were ready for the kind of musical cross-pollination that Memphis studios were producing, and they provided the distribution network that turned local innovations into national and international influences.
So, for people planning to visit Memphis today, Mr. Mink, what should they absolutely not miss?
Memphis today is this incredible combination of preserved musical history and continuing creative vitality that you can't experience anywhere else in America. The city has done an outstanding job of maintaining its musical heritage while supporting contemporary artists who understand and extend Memphis traditions. Graceland is obviously essential, not just because of Elvis's importance, but because it demonstrates how individual artistic vision could flourish in Memphis's supportive environment. The mansion, the recording studios, the automobile collection, the costumes, it's all preserved exactly as Elvis left it, giving visitors insight into both his creative process and his lifestyle. But equally important is the National Civil Rights Museum, built around the Lorraine Motel where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. The museum does brilliant work connecting the civil rights movement to Memphis's musical history, showing how artists like those at Stax Records were breaking down racial barriers through music while activists were challenging them in the political action. The Gibson Guitar Factory tour shows visitors how the instruments where they created Memphis music are still being manufactured in Memphis using traditional techniques combined with modern technology. For live music, visitors need to experience both Beale Street's blues clubs and some of the smaller venues where contemporary Memphis artists perform. Places like the High Tone Cafe, the Buccaneer, and Lafayette's Music Room feature the next generation of Memphis musicians who are extending the city's musical traditions. Food is part of the music experience, too. Even the chains have great barbecue. Memphis barbecue, soul food, and other local culinary traditions developed alongside the musical culture, and restaurants like the Arcade Restaurant, where Elvis ate regularly, connect visitors to the lifestyle that supported Memphis's creative community. In conclusion, Memphis today offers visitors the chance to experience American musical history, not as something dead and preserved, but as something living and continuing to influence new generations of artists and audiences.
Indeed, a legacy to the world. What makes Memphis unique compared to other American music destinations, Mr. Mink?
Memphis is unique because it's where so many crucial developments in American music actually happened, and you can still experience that creative environment today. There are several well-known musical cities. Nashville is wonderful for country music history, New Orleans is essential for jazz, and Memphis is where American popular music as we know it was invented. The concentration of musical history is incredible. Within a few city blocks, you can visit Sun Studio, where rock and roll was born, the Stax Museum, where Southern Soul was perfected, Beale Street, where the blues found its commercial expression, and Graceland, where Elvis demonstrated how individual artistic vision could transform American culture. The city's relationship with its musical heritage is perfect, respectful but not reverent, proud but not stuck in the past. Memphis understands that its musical traditions stay alive only when contemporary artists interpret them for new audiences while maintaining their authentic emotional power. Memphis also offers something you can't get in those other music destinations, the complete story of how American capitalism and entrepreneurship created opportunities for authentic artistic expression to flourish across cultural boundaries. The city's music history is also the story of American democracy working through economic opportunity rather than just political action. In conclusion, Memphis remains America's treasured musical destination because it offers visitors the chance to understand not just what happened in American music history, but how and why it happened and how those same creative forces continue operating today.
Oh, very well said, Mr. Mink. Very well said. So, how can we wrap up this important look at Memphis?
Memphis represents everything that's best about American music and American entrepreneurship. Here in this River City, visionary business leaders like Sam Phillips and Jim Stewart created opportunities for artists from every background to develop their talents, reach new audiences, and create music that changed the world. The free market didn't just allow this to happen, it made it inevitable. When you remove artificial barriers and let talent compete purely on merit, you get Elvis Presley and Howlin' Wolf recording in the same studio. You get integrated bands like Booker T and the MGs creating the soundtrack for the civil rights era. And you get Beale Street becoming a place where authentic blues expression could support an entire community of artists and entrepreneurs. The Memphis story proves that America's greatest cultural achievements emerge when entrepreneurial spirit combines with respect for authentic artistic expression. Every visitor to Memphis experiences this firsthand. Walking the same streets where music history was made, standing in the same studio where the songs that define American culture were recorded, and feeling the creative energy that continues attracting new generations of musicians from around the world. Memphis isn't just a tourist destination. It's a pilgrimage site for anyone who understands that American music, at its best, represents the creative collision of different traditions united by authentic emotional expression and supported by economic systems that reward genuine talent over artificial categories. In conclusion, Memphis remains America's musical melting pot, where the past and present converge to create experiences that remind us of why American music became the world's music and why that creative spirit continues inspiring new generations of audiences and artists to understand that great music transcends every boundary except the boundary between authentic and artificial expression.
Very well said, Mr. Meng. Very well said. I thank you for your legacy to the world. Memphis Grooves, the city that changed music forever, is a story of rhythm, soul, and cultural revolution. From the smoky blues clubs on Beale Street to the birth of the rock and roll at Sun Studio. Mr. Mike, would you like to plug in something?
Sure. If you don't mind, write the book, Grow the Business, and you can contact me for a book coaching business on LinkedIn, GMIC, the Doctor of Digital Smith, PhD. Pick up a couple volumes that I have on Amazon, Burning America, and On Track, Ian Hunter. Also listen to the Doctor of Digital podcast.
Yes, people, let's support Mr. Ming, the Doctor of Digital, because if you support him, for sure, more and more empowering authors to come, and for sure, more and more empowering books to come. And please do listen to our baby podcast, Mental Health 101. Mental Health 101 is created to empower our, of course, mental health awareness. Mr. Ming, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, my friend. Till next time, Deus Vult.
More to come, people. See you soon.